Welcome to all of you out there. It's the boys from Rotosaurus. We are back for round two, and we're bringing you the high stakes heat. Alongside me is the utterly flabbergasted Dave McDonald. Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm flabbergasted. I can't believe there's an episode two before February. I would have put money on the next episode coming in February.
I tried to torpedo it, but it did not work.
Yeah. Yeah, because we initially tried this for, like, what, Wednesday? Thursday?
Wednesday. Yeah. It is Friday night, actually. Yeah, it's still Friday. 2 minutes to midnight, Friday night.
We keep doing midnight our weekend episodes. This is not going to be the norm moving forward.
Rotosaurus After Dark is the norm.
That is the norm. Not on weekends though. Usually.
Yeah. But we don't have lives. So.
But I'm excited to bring the high stakes heat. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. We're going to talk about the some closer signings today.
Yeah.
And what effects they might have on those bullpens and. Thankfully, not any of my teams that I've drafted thus far. There was an interesting hire in Boston announced today. And we're gonna spend a lot of time today going over some player spotlights. Guys that have come up in our DM threads and in our consortium chat. And we've been riffing back and forth.
And on X, on Twitter, you know. I think a lot of what I'd like to do this year is kind of organically, as things come up, like as I have discussions with people, as you have discussions with people, we should bring it to the pod and talk about it and see where we come out.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think it makes it easier on me because show prep is not exactly my strong suit.
That is a fact, as
you would imagine.
I would, as the person who writes 90% of the show notes between this show and Justin's show. Yeah, I am aware.
I value your friendship and your abilities.
Thank you. Yeah.
So there was a hire in the Boston Red Sox organization, the Parma Heights finest, Parma Heights, Ohio, Kyle Bodie, friend of Tony DiVincenzo from Childhood Magic, the Gathering tournaments. founder of Driveline. Joining the Red Sox organization as a pitching advisor. I mean, this is just pure speculation at this point because I don't know exactly what his contributions are going to be. I'm sure it's going to be all over the board. And his first go around with the Red Sox or the Cincinnati Reds didn't exactly go the best. They parted ways pretty quickly. Do you have hope for better performance from young guys like Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck, and the like, or is this just kind of a non-story until you see something?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's purely speculative. I have no idea. I'm not at the level of pitching where I can say, okay, you know, Bodie coming over is going to, you know, help Houck's spin rate or, you know, Bayo's pitch mix or anything like that. I'm hoping we hear things. Like, I'm hoping because when they were at Driveline, you know, they loved to, you know, put that stuff out, but that was kind of like a marketing campaign. So I'm imagining we're going to hear a lot less about what's actually going on inside the Red Sox organization with what Bodie is doing with the staff. But I mean, it has to be, if anything, at least somewhat of a good thing, right? I mean, it can't make
You'd
you
think.
Like these guys less because, you know, some of these guys are, you know, especially I know Cutter is a kind of a consortium favorite. We're all kind of, you know, in on him, assuming he has a rotation spot. And I like Bayo too as a shot. I mean, I think there's a lot of volatility there, but I think, you know, he's very talented and you know, he's got the prospect pedigree there. For where he goes, I think that Bayo's a pretty nice target as well. So yeah, it makes me feel, I think it's just more of like a tiebreaker, I guess, where if you have them, these guys kind of close to other guys, maybe you say, well, you got Bodie there. Maybe he makes a difference and, you know, helps these guys develop a little quicker.
For what it's worth, their new GM, he's the GM, right? Craig Breslow. I think he's the GM president.
Let me look it up. Continue though.
I mean, he's obviously a former pitcher himself, very analytically inclined. You know, it's he's very forward thinking. So it certainly seems like it makes sense that Bodhi would align with a lot of what he does. Even in his tweet slash post, you know, Bodhi said, "I've been searching for multiple years for the right fit before getting back into a front office, and this is the one." So it seems like a calculated decision. It's not something obviously he made on a whim, and I'm sure they had a prior relationship beforehand. This is something that we kind of joked about, but is there any inkling in your mind that Trevor Bauer could return to MLB through his former Driveline buddy Kyle Bodie's advice towards Craig Breslow?
I mean, I have no idea if Bauer is still being actively blackballed or not. It seems like he shouldn't be at this point. It doesn't seem like there should be anything holding him back from coming back to the MLB at this point. But I don't know. I don't know if Boston would have the inside track because of that. Feels like
they need another
feels like
pitcher,
it could
right?
Be.
I personally don't have a ton of hope for Tanner Houck remaining in a rotation for a long period of time. I kind of feel like they need another starter. And Bauer also has been recently losing public favor in Japan for supporting a U.S. naval officer that apparently killed a couple of Japanese civilians in a traffic accident. So I don't know. Purely speculation, of course. There's no rumors about anything like that. But it almost seems like Bauer might have to find somewhere else to play this coming year, which there are other Asian leagues that he could join. But
true. He could go to the KBO next.
I would imagine he wants to come back to MLB as long as someone will have him, though.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I definitely. But is he going to come over with any offer, or is he going to be, you know, right, Trevor Bauer and hold out for the perfect deal, or, you know, a certain amount of money, you know, with his ego and his, you know, I don't know. But I mean, kind of beggar's chooser situation. I think he'd much rather be back in the United States in MLB pitching than be anywhere in Asia. So a couple of things. Breslow was named the chief baseball officer of the Red Sox.
Okay.
So whatever that means.
So basically Chaim Bloom 2.0.
Probably. But they said that they specifically brought him in because they feel like they need to develop their pitching more. Mm-hmm. And then he brought in Bodhi for that reason as well. He basically said his honest assessment is relative to position player development, our pitching development is lacking, Breslow said. So it definitely sounds like he wants Bodhi to implement, you
that
know,
would be even very interesting. Wow.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Are they just talking about at the minor league level, or mm-hmm. is he going to be doing this at the major league level, and or as well, or whatever? So, you know, I don't know. But I think it can't hurt, right? Like you definitely have to kind of treat these young pitchers like they went to Driveline this offseason, essentially, right? Like that's essentially what we're probably getting.
I mean, he's in the organization before spring training, so obviously the training regimens, the ramp up, it's all going to be influenced by him, you would think.
I would think.
I mean, he's coming in plenty in advance, so yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting. Obviously, we're going to start hearing from those pitchers, and I'm sure they will be asked many questions about it when spring training starts. A little bit more speculation, but more news-based. We had two closer signings today. One of them was rumored. The other one kind of came out of nowhere. First one that came out of nowhere was Robert Stevenson going to the Angels on a 3-year deal, which, you know, we kind of wondered why he was hanging around out there for a while, just because of how dominant he was for Tampa Bay once they brought him in last year. Oddly enough, on waivers from the Pirates, who obviously couldn't use a dominant reliever.
No, of course not.
But Carlos Estevez had the closer role for all of last season. He was very good in the first half. Despite his poor whips, he performed extremely well and got you plenty of saves in the first half, and then really faltered in the second half, to the point where he was actively hurting his owners in the last couple months of the season. Do we think that Stevenson is going to be replacing Estevez, who's, I believe he's on the last year of his deal. He only signed a 2-year deal last year.
Yes, he is.
The performance was obviously quite poor, and he certainly is not guaranteed anything. This signing, you'd think, would allow him to eclipse Estevez for the role?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because Estevez is a guy who, again, we always talk about the closer label, right? Like, he kind of has that. And he, you know, he had 31 saves last year. What?
Yeah. The Rockies kept trying to give it to him, and he kept not wanting it, it seemed like. What do you mean he has the closer label? Just because of last year?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, he has been a successful closer for, you know, an extended period of time, which was most of last year. You know, he had a bunch of saves in Colorado too. He had like 22, 25 saves over several years there. But like you said, he didn't really ever take it over there. But, you know, Colorado is Colorado. I don't know. So I don't know if that's like if you're saying like he doesn't want the closer, you know.
No. Role. I meant he just – they kept giving him the role and he kept sucking. That's all.
Oh, well, it's Colorado. How many people don't suck in Colorado? That's not really relevant. I will say, though, so I just read that Stevenson's getting $11 million a year. So it's a three-year, $33 million contract, whereas Estevez is only making like a little under $7 million a year. So, yeah, they could give Stevenson the role. You know, Estevez isn't like a guy who has been a closer for, you know, a bunch of years or anything. I do think right now if I were in a DC, I would want to draft both of them. And I really like that approach because if Stevenson does close, he's a dominant closer. I mean, this is a guy who was the most dominant reliever in MLB since pretty much June last year. So, I mean, just striking out everybody. And, you know, he was a guy who had a huge pedigree as a prospect, you know, former first rounder, struggled as a starter, you know, struggled initially as a reliever, and then eventually figured it out, of course, with the Rays, as often they seem to do with players. But yeah, I think he's, I mean, obviously his ADP is going way up. So whatever Stevenson's ADP right now is irrelevant because,
yeah,
you know, you have 346.5 January DC
right.
ADP. Obviously that's going to come way, way up. I would assume he's a top 150 pick right now.
Yeah. So Estevez was going at 205, and I would feel that people are going to assume that Stevenson's going to be the closer.
Yeah. I would say this though, just be careful. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think it's definitely Stevenson. At least I don't know. I don't know if there's anything in like any clauses in his contract stipulating, you know, save ops or, you know, bonuses based on games closed or whatever.
It's a high enough annual value that
it is.
There probably aren't that many of them.
Right.
But maybe they could be. Now you mentioned you want to draft both of them in a DC.
Probably, yeah.
I feel like
I imagine Estevez's ADP is going
to
go down.
If it's going to plummet like to around 400, I can say I could get behind that. Yeah.
Even like 320, 350.
Those are early picks. I mean, you're going to use two top 25 round picks on the possible Angels closer.
Well, you're going to need relievers to put in when you don't have starters to play. Like that happens every year. You plan on it not happening, but it happens every year.
Right.
The other thing is if the Angels end up sucking, they could easily, especially with Estevez, they could trade him somewhere. They could trade him with a contender. If he's pitching well, he could end up closing for someone
else. If he's pitching well, but if he's pitching like he was last year, you wouldn't even want him in your lineup if he were the closer, just with how bad he was in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're hoping for better than what you saw last year. I mean, the K rate was good, but he walked a lot of guys, but that was the most he's ever walked. So I don't know. There's probably something up there. But yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I think it's very possible that Stevenson gets the job outright. But I'm just saying I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket. I would, If the price is decent enough on Estevez, I would double
that's fine. That's fine. Opportunity cost in a DC is a big deal to me, and I I feel like I don't like taking two relievers from the same team unless one of them is way late. But I hear what you're saying.
Okay. I
Yeah.
just,
All right.
it feels like a situation where it's just those two, right? Like, do you think
Yeah,
anybody
no. I
else?
mean, Ben Joyce doesn't appear to be able
I
to
don't
stay
think so.
healthy. I forget who they even have other than that. I don't know if it really matters. What about well, we don't have to spend as much time on the Astros news, but the Astros did sign Josh Hader to a 5-year deal today. It was rumored and everybody was freaking out about their Presley shares, and it's come true. So I don't know what they're gonna do here. We got a new manager, Joe Espada. He was Dusty's bench coach, and Presley's been the guy for 3+ years now, but there were some cracks in the armor with Presley. Is there any way that Hader and him and Presley share the role, or do you think this is pretty much Hader? I mean, they're paying Hader the highest annual value for a reliever in history, so
Yeah.
I would think it's going to be just pretty much Hader 85-90% of the time. But
Yeah,
what do
I
you
mean,
think?
like there's always that, 5% chance that maybe they want Hader as the multi-inning fireman or whatever. I just don't I
But he
don't
hasn't done that in a while.
right. He hasn't done
Right.
it in a while, and I don't think that the Houston Astros think that way. I could
Yeah,
be
they're pretty
wrong, but
traditional. Yeah.
right. I think, Presley has been kind of on the decline for a couple of years
Right.
now, and he's blown a lot of saves. And I just think that they don't feel comfortable with him as their closer. And they're trying to replace him last year. Plus, the other thing is, like, he is, he's 35 years old right
Right.
now. So, he's, I don't think he's, going to get better from
He
here.
also has a vesting option in his contract for next year. I'm curious what that
Ah,
is.
okay.
I have to look that one up. Keep
He's
talking.
he let me be clear though. Like, he hasn't been bad. I mean, he had 2.99 Sierra last year. 3.58 ERA with a 1.07 WHIP. The K rate has come down though. He was like a 12 to 13 K per nine guy, and he was down to 10 K per nine last year. I definitely think that the stuff is not as good as it once was. And I just think he's blowing more saves than they had. Six saves last year he blew. Granted, he's no Emmanuel Clase, but in blown saves, but he's up there. And it just felt like they didn't trust him a ton. And sure enough, they were trying to trade for Hader last year, and now they finally got him. So I have to believe that they just got Hader to be their closer, and that Presley is probably just a guy that they're going to use as a setup man, and then probably not re-sign after that.
That's the way it seems to me. Now, his vesting option is for 50 appearances in 23 and 24 each. So he did meet that last year with 60 plus. So you would think, as long as he's not hurt, he's still going to make those appearances.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an issue. They're not trying to avoid that or anything. It's not for
No,
saves or
I
games
think they're
finished or
fine
anything
paying
like
him,
that.
so
Yeah,
that's,
they're going
yeah.
to pay him. Yeah, his skills don't look like they've declined really that much. It's just been injuries, age, what have you, inconsistency at times. But when you can bring in the best reliever on the market, when, I mean, I guess, yeah, I don't know. Their bullpen is pretty solid. They still have Brian Abreu, they still have Rafael Montero, but after that it is kind of, I don't know, Rafael Montero himself was pretty bad last year. Yeah, it was a pretty weak bullpen. So it
Yeah,
does
I
make
mean,
sense to
yeah,
bump Presley
I
down
think
and extend it out.
they're going to need another good reliever there. It doesn't have to be a closer.
Yeah, they're going to need a good lefty because they really don't have one. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with my two Hader shares. He's going to a very good team.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty confident that that's going to be paying off for me.
Yeah,
His I would imagine his price will get a little bit of a bump. He's going at 45 right now. I would imagine he's going to be, it's going to be him and Demin Williams now. I think he'll probably go above Edwin if I had to guess based
Yeah, I mean,
on it.
there's not a lot of upward mobility there. I mean, Devin's
No.
going at 41, Hader's going at
Right.
45. It's pretty much, Devin, Edwin, and Hader are all going, and then Class A slightly after them, and Duran. They're all pretty much going at the same time. It's just kind of personal preference. But yeah, I could see, taking him over Edwin at this point, and maybe Devin too.
Yeah. Because well, we technically don't know what's going to happen with Edwin. I know it was a fluke ankle thing, and it probably is fine, but you never know. There's always that chance that something is not structurally sound.
I'm not worried about it, but yeah, we'll see more as we get closer to the regular season. But I was just going to say, you know, with, you know, when Hader was, you know, really bad, I don't think that, you know, the Astros care about that, but fantasy drafters will probably have that in the back of their mind. They'll be like, you know, in 2022 when Hader had that 5.22 ERA, you know, granted he was back to a 1.28 ERA last year, but some people will probably use that as an excuse. He did have a 4.8 walk per nine too last year, so I can see people still gravitating towards guys like Devin and Edwin over him.
Yeah, wow, 13% walk percentage. Yeah, that's
it was high.
That's high for a closer, but when you're striking out that many, 37% strikeout rate,
that helps.
That does help, and that was his lowest of his career since 2017. So, well. Yeah, with that 5-year deal, I would imagine he's definitely the guy. That's my thought. Okay, the meat of today is really going to be a few player spotlights. We're going to start with some pitchers first. And these are, like we said, guys that we have talked about in our DMs and in our chat and seen on Twitter. And a couple of them were guys that I've heard a lot on podcasts as well.
Yeah.
So, we're going to kind of start at the top here. We'll start with Tyler Glasnow. One of our perennial favorites to draft.
Right.
Going right in January DCs, so that's 15-team draft and hold at an ADP of 38.5, the new Los Angeles Dodger with his gigantic new contract and his sparkling bill of health. I don't know, is there any chance that he's giving us more than 120 innings this year?
Is there a chance? Sure. You know, there's always a chance.
Chance that he's giving us more than 120 innings this year?
More than 120? I mean, 120 is a low threshold, although for him...
Is it? Not.
Well, he threw 120 last year. That was his career high,
exactly,
though.
120, yes.
Yes. So, you know, this is a guy who's been in the league since 2016, and his career high innings pitched is 120 out of all of that. You know, he averages 72 innings per season. I'm excluding his rookie year when he got called up, because that's not fair to count that. But yeah, 72 innings per season he averages. So this is a guy who has phenomenal stuff, top tier, you know, starting pitcher stuff based on, he's a top tier starting pitcher based on talent, elite stuff. You know, that's not the issue. It's, you know, and when he was in Tampa, it was always, well, is he ever going to go over 5 innings? Probably not. Now that he's in LA, maybe they push him a little bit, but is that a good thing? I don't know. Your BFF Curlin seems to think so, though. He's like his top pitching target this year. So, I don't think any of us are going to be able to get there with the third round price tag. You have his ADP at 38.5, which would put him at like middle of the third. Yeah. I would not take him before the fifth round, personally. I just you're paying for him basically to stay healthy for at least 150 innings, and considering he's never done that before, you know, even if I think he does beat his personal best, do I think he beats that by a significant amount of innings? Probably not.
Can you stomach your ace getting, let's say, 150 innings? I mean, in this climate, you know, 180 is like an SP2 level amount of innings. Could you stomach your SP1 having 150 dominant innings for the best offense in the league? You know, if he makes 24 starts, he probably wins 16 of them. Does that pay off for you? You know, as long as you build well after him.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
It's tough. It all boils down to your tolerance for stashing guys when they're hurt, being able to backfill with guys that you can rely on. I mean, it's not how I like to start my pitching staff. I'll say that. I think.
Well, you mentioned 180 innings. There were 23 starters last year with over 180 innings.
Yeah. So you want your SP one and two to get that if they can.
I mean, obviously not SP one and two. I mean, because there's 23 guys. So there's 15 teams in the league. So if everybody takes an SP one and two, there's not enough guys to go over 180 inches
sure.
there.
I mean, you're going to have injuries. You're going to, you know, they're pitchers. So
right.
Not all of them are going to get that threshold.
But I would just say my SP one would be my threshold. Like, I don't want Glasnow as my SP one, who's going to get me probably under 180 innings. Yeah. Like, you know, the innings are going down. And the one thing I meant to bring up from our last podcast that, you know, your standard for WHIP needs to change. You know, you in your head think that, you know, 1.25 is a bad WHIP, and it's not. As I was saying, there's only one guy who had a sub one WHIP last year. One. So like, we all need to adjust to that. Like the super low WHIP guys are probably not coming back with the new rules. So, you know, we all kind of need to, and with the innings pitched, there's only five guys with 200 plus innings last year. So, you know, and with guys like Verlander and Scherzer probably never getting to that point again, they were kind of those guys who'd get there a lot. I don't know how many guys can. Guys like Framber can probably, you know, Gerrit Cole, Logan Webb probably can. Gallen got 210 last year. He can probably do that again. Maybe George Kirby takes that step.
Yeah, I feel like Kirby takes that step, yeah.
He was at 191 last year. Yeah, mm-hmm. Wheeler can do it. Burns can probably do it. Nola can do it. You know, but there's still not a lot of guys that you can put at that point. So I don't know, like 150 innings to 180 innings is a big difference. Do I think he can give me 150 innings? Maybe, but I think you're delusional if you're expecting 180 from Glasnow.
I mean, yeah, that's the hard thing. Like, I don't know if you see, he's healthy now. So, but he's always talked. I mean, I feel like the last 3 years he's been talking about how his elbow just randomly goes in and out, or it feels different and he pitches through it. It'll randomly pop. There's all kinds of different clips that I've seen of him giving interviews in 2021, 2020, before all the sticky stuff, where he would talk about, oh yeah, my elbow just kind of feels different right now, and I'm just kind of learning to use it this way. It's like, I don't like hearing things like that. And you know, it's not like he said it yesterday, but that's always in my head. He's still never proven that he can throw a ace's workload, despite the fact that I know his innings are going to be amazing. I can't stomach that in the third round, especially in leagues that I'm paying $1,500, $1,750 for. I mean, I'm just not going to hitch my wagon to that. Yeah, if I'm doing 10 gladiators, sure, why not? Because everybody's going to have injuries in gladiators. So, yeah, I'll take Glasnow because when he's in the lineup, he's going to kick ass. But
interesting. I've never done a gladiator, but I would think you'd want to go the complete opposite direction and take the healthiest guys you can take.
I hear that too, but there's only 23 players that are drafted total. So I feel like...
For you?
Per
team.
Per team, right. 23 drafted per team, 9 pitchers per team. I feel like everybody's going to have pitcher injuries because... That's just the nature of the beast. So,
well, sure, but like if you're drafting a guy who you expect to get hurt, isn't that just making it
yeah,
worse?
But he's also a guy that's going to give you
you're just
going
to hope to get good ratios.
Yeah, I mean,
worry about
if he throws counting. 140, if he throws 140 and they're Cy Young caliber innings, and then he's out of the lineup, you know, nothing's hurting me. I'm not streaming shit to make up for it. So in a gladiator, I feel like. I'm doing one gladiator.
Okay.
And I signed up for the last one, the very last one. We got all kinds of our friends in it. It's going to be a fun time.
Who's in it?
Fish, Gialdi, DuPont, Zach. There's all kinds of people in it. There's more. I can't remember everybody right now.
All right.
But yeah.
Do you have a game plan?
Kinda. I don't want to, you know. Yeah, it's the only one I'm doing, so. And these guys have all done 6,000 of them. They can do them in their sleep. So I don't want to give
Fish
everything
are,
guys.
Zach
I'm taking
already,
Tyler Glasnow in our gladiator. So
yeah, Zach and Fish have already done a 50 pack each. So yeah,
it's a 50 pack.
You're a little behind the eight ball, but
they did a whole case of them.
Bottom line with Glasnow, personally, I'm not comfortable using any. I think in the fifth round, I think the upside makes sense where he's your SP2 or 3. I will not take him in the third as my SP1.
All right. We're both in agreement there. A lot of talk on Tanner Bibee this offseason. A lot of mixed reviews, too, despite the fact that the results were really good last year, held his own pretty much the entire time he was in the majors. A couple blips here and there with control, but all in all, pretty stellar rookie campaign for the guy. You know, we've talked in our group chat about how down on Bibee Nick Pollock is of Pitcher List and how I kind of go back and forth with it. I tend to disagree just because of what we saw from him last year. I feel like, you know, Nick watches pitchers a lot, obviously. We watched Bibee quite a bit last year as Guardians fans, and he's got a four-pitch mix that's pretty polished. The fastball is not the best in the league, but it's also not bad. He's got two really stellar off-speeds and a curve that needs some work. But for me, with Bibee, it's a sum-of-the-parts kind of thing. Yes, the fastball is average. The curve is bad. The off-speeds are both good to very good. And the way he utilized them last year, I just see that continuing going forward. I am obviously not looking for a sub-3 ERA from Bibee next year, but I'm looking at him as a solid SP3 or even SP2 that I feel really confident putting out there pretty much all the time. What about you?
Yeah, so, I mean, with the results, you know, I do think he got lucky. I think the 4.19 Sierra was probably closer to who he is than the 2.98 ERA that he put out there. Sub-9 K per 9, you know, 8.94 K per 9 rate. Also slightly worrisome, like not ideal for what you want in your starter. You know, you want a guy who's over 9 for sure. Now he's basically at 9.
He's shown that in the minors though.
He has, yeah. And that's the thing. I feel like it's probably likely that he does better than that this year. You know, and you mentioned Nick Pollock, who you originally brought this up because you're like, you know, he's very down on him. You know, he's, you know, thinks that Bibee is not that great. Nick is like the greatest evaluator of pitchers that I've seen. Like in season, there's no one better. I always on a daily basis read his starting pitcher roundup from every day. And it helps me a ton because he sees things that I just can't. But I will say that sometimes I question how he ranks starters. So, you know, I don't necessarily take his rankings to be something that I invest a lot in, but I think it's like a good starting point. And then you can kind of maneuver them from there. You know, but you're mentioning he has four pitches, the fastball is like average to slightly below average, but he throws at 95. He doesn't get enough swing and strike on it, but he's got a decent expected wOBA on it. I'm hoping he brings that. He threw it 47% of the time last year. I'm hoping he brings that number down this year. The slider is good. He gets above average swing strike rate, good and O swing rates as well. He limits hard contact with it, and it's a low expected wOBA. The change is his bread and butter. He gets a 19% swing strike rate on it, very low expected wOBA, and very low hard contact on it. The curve is bad. Gives up a lot of hard contact, not nearly enough swing strike on it, but he only throws it 9% of the time. So like you said, it's underdeveloped. Either he needs to commit to developing that curve, or he needs to ditch it and just go use with a three-pitch mix. Yeah. I will say that even though he, you know, this is a guy who like had a super low walk rate in the minors, like 1.98 walks per nine in high A, 1.71 walks per nine in double A. Then in triple A, it rose, but it was only in three starts, so I'm not really worried about that.
Yep.
It was 2.85 last year in the majors, so it'll probably, I expect it to go down a little bit. Not that 2.85 is bad or anything, but I will say he does lose command from time to time. Like he had six starts where he had 4 to 5 walks. And he kind of had those outings in the minors too. And from the local guys that I read covering Bibee, they kind of said, that a lot of it was, you know, umpires having a really bad game with him and all that stuff. And but I kind of feel like the fact that he then had those kind of games in the majors as well, unless they were all Angel Hernandez games, I kind of feel like there might be something there. There he might just kind of go in and out of his command from time to time. I still think you're going to have a sub 3 walk per nine, but hopefully closer to the sub 2 walk per nine guy in the minors that we saw this year in 2024. But I think he's a good control guy overall. Not enough K's, but I think if he throws the change in the slider more and the fastball and the curve less, I think he can easily change that. And something that we kind of talked about is that we just think he's polished. Like, he just seems to know how to pitch. I still believe that, and I'm in on him. He's not a guy I'm going to be like, I'm not going to jump him up the board or anything, but I can definitely see myself taking some shares this year.
Yeah, his price is palatable. I mean, he's going around, that was my favorite word last podcast, I was told, palatable. He's going around 101.5, 101.5, which is a seventh rounder. Yeah, he's been dropping to the eighth round, I've seen. So he doesn't have an exorbitant price.
I would say it's a little high for me. Like, I would say I would want him to fall a little bit from where he currently is.
And he does. He does tend to.
He does seem like the kind of guy who would fall.
Yeah, right. And you know, I look at his scatter plots, or I look at his heat maps, and I love his locations. You know, the slider is consistently down and away to lefties. The changeup is a little middle in, but it does tend to go down as well. Four
but
seam does tend to sink.
Are locations something that we can count
they're,
on?
They're not terribly sticky. No, yeah. I just, so, in terms of your looking at him as being polished, looking at his approach, looking at him knowing how to pitch, he came in with the right game plan already. And like you said, I just want to see him ease off the four seam a little bit more as well. 47. I don't like taking guys that tend to go above 45%. And you got to think, this is the Guardians. They love to push those off speeds, especially when guys have fastballs that tend to be lagging behind in terms of their other pitches.
Yeah.
So, it's a guy that I think has the head for it, and I like him to still take a step forward with good major league development. You know, and he's coming to a spring training with the job. That means something. That he is the SP2 at this moment. I mean,
you know, Bieber still has the around pick 100 unless he certainly has the job.
No, I mean, in terms of his mindset and his ability to develop himself this spring training, he's not
okay.
He doesn't have to prove that he's major league worthy anymore. I mean, and you know, that's narrative stuff, but I mean, these are human beings, and these are young human beings. So I truly think that that means something as well in terms of his just ability to continue to progress. Let's move on to a Philadelphia Philly, Christopher Sanchez, who I didn't have a lot of. I don't think I had more than one share last year, and it was obviously off of waivers. I didn't have him in any DCs or anything like that. I didn't realize just what a good second half he had in, and it wasn't like the Ranger Suarez where it was constantly beating up on, you know, the Pirates every other time out, or, you know, the Mets offense when they were down and out or anything like that. This is a guy that, you know, I'll let you go through the notes that you prepared for this, but we've talked a good amount about Christopher Sanchez, and it's a guy that I feel myself getting more and more into, especially since his current ADP is only 242.
Yeah.
In January DCs.
That won't stay, but yeah.
The more he's being talked about these days, it's, you'd have to think it's gonna bubble up a little bit.
Yeah. On Twitter, every other Bloom board has Christopher Sanchez on it. Maybe even every Bloom board, as Ryan even himself mentioned, you know, he's quickly becoming his favorite.
So he's the new Eovaldi of the Bloom boards.
Yeah, exactly. Because this was Eovaldi last year. Yep. But I just, you know, this kind of came out of a discussion I had with Ryan Venancio, who was on the other side of this, where he was, you know, he's taking the side of, this is a guy who consistently has had control issues in the minors, and then all of a sudden, you know, kind of, in his words, you know, more or less out of nowhere, started to display really great control. And, you know, normally I would be with him on that because, you know, we're guys who we look at the track records and we say, okay, this is a guy who's had bad control. And when I say bad control, I mean, like, he was like a 5 walks per 9 guy in the minors pretty much up until 2022, where he improved. But then he came up in 2023 last year and struggled with his walks in the minors again to start the year before getting called up. But he had 2 starts in the minors before getting called up where he, you know, only gave up a couple of walks. He gave up 2 walks on June 4th, and then on June 10th, he gave up 1 walk, both of them in 6 innings. So then they brought him up, and this guy went on an incredible run. You know, he came up in June. He only had 4 starts from June to through September that had 2 to 3 walks, only 4 starts. He didn't walk more than 3 guys in any start. Every other start, he had 0 to 1 walks allowed. So not only is the average overall phenomenal, but like on a start-to-start basis, he was consistent every time. And I found this Inquirer article talking about his control where they're telling him basically it was kind of like Robbie Ray. You remember how with Robbie Ray, they're saying, look, you've got phenomenal stuff. Stop trying to hit the corners and everything because right. You're missing too
stop
much.
Throwing to a spot. Just
stop trying to be there. Too fine. Just throw it in the zone and nobody's going to hit you. That's exactly what they did with Christopher Sanchez. He doesn't have Robbie Ray's velocity, but he has phenomenal movement. And so they said basically, look, with your movement, and that's the other reason why his control was so bad, because when you're trying to hit a corner and your ball moves horizontally as much as Sanchez's does, it's really difficult to do that. So they're like, stop doing that. Just throw it in the zone, and we think that you're going to be unhittable enough where it's not going to be a bad thing. It's going to be a good thing. And he did that. And so he made, you know, a philosophical change in his pitching approach like Robbie Ray did. And so I 100% believe in this change. I don't see any way he revert. Now, do I think he's going to have as low of a walk rate as he did last year? No, I don't think he's going to have, you know, he had, you know, ridiculous 1.45 walks per nine since coming up last year. I think it'll probably be closer to you know, 2. I think it'll be over 2. But I think it's going to be very, very good. And I don't see any way he reverts because, like, obviously he knew what he was doing. He made a conscious change to do it. I don't see it as a fluke whatsoever. He was also the only Philly starting pitcher last year who didn't struggle with the faster clock. And there was a study done where, because a bunch of pitchers, I tweeted about this like a week and a half ago, something like that. There's a study done where, because of a bunch of pitchers were like, every time we go to Philly, it feels like it's fast. It's a faster clock than mm-hmm. everywhere else. And the results showed that. I don't have the tweet on hand, but
yeah, I remember seeing it. There were more pitch clock violations in that park than anywhere else.
Yes, exactly. So what they realized was that Philly had a faster clock than everybody else. And maybe that could be why Nola struggled. You know, I mean, obviously the rest of their rotation, you know, has other issues other than just the pitch clock. Like, you know, I'm not saying that Taijuan Walker or Ranger Suarez are the greatest pitchers in the world, but they both struggled last year as well. Even Zach Wheeler struggled relative to what you would expect from him. So Christopher Sanchez, though, not only didn't struggle, but he flourished last year. So, I mean, I don't know. It just it all seems like it's coming up roses for Sanchez. And then, you know, in our debate, in my debate with Venancio, then Rob DiVincenzo – or DiVincenzo, Rob DiPietro jumped in, and he said, for starting pitchers with more than 40 innings pitched last year in the second half, he ranked 25th in K-minus walk rate at 20.7%, 9th in Sierra at 3.26, 2nd in O-swing rate at 38%, 2nd in ground ball rate at 57.5%. And he has not one but 2 elite pitches with his change and slider. Everybody knows about the change, but the slider is also elite. So This is a guy who, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm going down with the ship. Like,
no,
I want Sanchez.
And yeah, and he's not expensive either. He's the kind of guy you like.
He
to
will
take
be
a
though.
On.
Like, I know that this is gonna. He there's no way in hell you're gonna get him for an ADP over 200 in March.
That's fair.
In
but,
NFBC
but even
live.
But even at that point, he's your SP4, and that's a good chance to take.
Yeah,
to
I'm
your,
fine with
to
it.
Your points, his zone percentage did go up last year. He was up over he was up around 51%, which was up over the previous 2 years by a good margin. Zone contact went down, chase rates went way up, chase contact went way down. You know, it all speaks to a guy that had a little bit more confidence to utilize his stuff, and part of that comes from having extended time in the majors too. So his true talent did seem to come out last year. And it's definitely a guy that's worth taking a shot on as your SP4 or even your SP5 if you drafted a lot of them. Yeah, it's not the best park, but it's still a good offensive team. Better defensive team than it has been in the past. Bryson Stott's pretty capable. So, yeah, it's a guy that I feel like I'm going to have a good bit more of. Last pitcher that we have for today is one that I have not drafted in a few years. Yu Darvish. You know, and I didn't look up his ADP. Did you?
I have it on there.
Oh, you have it on there. 220. 220. Wow, that's actually a lot higher than I expected. So he's
higher
going
as
above
in earlier?
Earlier, yes. Earlier.
Really?
Sorry. Earlier. I expected it to be a little bit later just because of how last year ended, how last year was in general. He wasn't his best self last year, and then his season ended early. And he's also 38 now this year. Just signed that big extension, though, with the Padres. So he's going to be there until he's an old man.
All that is true, but this is a guy who's been drafted in the top 100 for how many years now? So, I mean, like, I wasn't expecting him to be any much lower than 220. You know, most people don't put much stock into injuries.
Yeah,
like we,
this,
so.
this year has been a little different. There are a lot of guys, as we've seen, who've gotten that injury prone label, and they have dropped quite a bit more than they have in years past, like Buxton, Stanton, and the like.
Yeah, well, we'll get to them, but yeah, Yu Darvish is, you know, a guy who's been injury prone for most of his career. So, you know, our good friend Lucas Beery, who we mentioned on the last podcast, he DM'd me and he said, "Are you crossing off Darvish?" And you know, I looked into it more. You know, he's 37. He's turning 38 in August, and he's coming off of elbow inflammation with bone spurs, which shut his season down last year. Now, granted, you know, he's pitching for a team that had nothing to play for, so I'm sure that played a part where, you know, there's no reason to bring him back, really. But despite all that, like, even if he didn't get shut down, I would still have, you know, be hesitant to count on him for significant innings, given his age and injury track record. But you know, my question is, and something I need to look into, were the bone spurs causing elbow inflammation, or are those two separate things? Because anytime I hear elbow inflammation, I'm like, I'm out.
I would imagine the inflammation was a result of the bone spurs.
Could be.
I mean,
not necessarily, though.
They're both centered in the exact same part of the body, so I would imagine they'd been related.
I don't know if bone spurs cause elbow inflammation. Like, I don't recall.
Because, I mean, bone spurs cause irritation in the elbow. Your body responds to irritation by generally sending more, you know, white blood cells or fluid to that area. So, yeah, the inflammation would likely be a result of the spurs themselves.
All right. So then without the bone spurs, we just hear elbow inflammation. Obviously, you start thinking possible Tommy John. Do the bone spurs make you feel better about him?
As long as they were surgically removed,
but
were they surgically removed?
Were they? Yeah. I haven't heard anything on an operation. I think they just shut him down and they're assuming that, you know, rest will heal him. And, you know, we all know how that goes. So I don't have any interest in drafting any starters who are coming into the season with an injury. Really, any injury, but especially an arm shoulder injury. So, you know, I, even at 220, I feel like there's too many guys going both around him and after him that I would rather have. And I kind of made up a little list here. Like, would you rather take Darvish or Kikuchi?
Kikuchi.
Yes. Darvish or Maeda?
I mean, Maeda is healthy, and I don't have a guarantee of that with Darvish. I mean, yeah, Maeda could get injured too because that's what he likes to do, but
right.
No, I'd feel more comfortable taking Maeda.
Bayo or Darvish?
Bayo's a tough one for me because I don't particularly care for Bayo. I don't like what I've seen so far, and I don't know if I expect it to be much better.
Even with
but that said, he's even with that Bodie said there? He's healthy. If I could answer none, I would answer none. But given the choice between the two, I guess I'd go Bayo.
Okay, you know, Christopher Sanchez also
easily,
goes
easily,
like 20 picks after
easily
Darvish.
Over Darvish.
Yeah,
yeah.
Charlie Morton.
Ooh, ratios are really a question with Morton. And he's old as well. I really am off of Morton. I feel okay. Like I'd. It's another no.
that's one of your boys from
a couple years ago, but I haven't had him in a while. I mean, that whip is just he's I don't think there's any hope of him not walking dudes anymore. Yeah. So neither. I guess maybe I'd take the chance on Darvish in that instance because I'm really off of Morton.
Okay, so you think his 1.43 WHIP last year is who he is now?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much.
Okay.
I was surprised he actually came back, honestly. I thought he was going to retire.
I thought he was going to retire too. So, yeah, I'm with you that I think it would be tough to take a guy like Morton. How about Lodolo?
Well, we had a discussion before this that I don't really care for anybody that's in Great American. That said, the overall talent of Lodolo, I don't know. That's tough. It's another guy that he had an injury issue last year, tibia stress fracture.
Yeah, but that's not just a non-arm injury, though.
Yeah, but he got shut down on his minor league rehab because it flared up again. And, you're right, though. It's not an arm injury, so I'd probably have to go with Lodolo. I don't like starting guys in Great American at all, but...
I know you don't, but I'm... Here's the thing, like, if you're hittable... Yes, that's a huge problem. And I'm not saying that I love starting a guy who plays in Great American, but, you know, a guy who strikes out 12.3 K per nine with a sub-3 walk per nine, 2.62 last year. I mean, granted, 7 starts, but, I mean, the stuff is really, really good. He has the ability to – he has the stuff to be an ace. Will he put it together this year? I don't know, but – I feel a lot better about Lodolo being able to do that than Darvish this year.
Well, we all know that Darvish has the capability of just putting everything back together. I feel like he's that guy with his vast arsenal and his feel for his pitches that, you know, as long as he's healthy, he can put that kind of season together. We haven't seen that from him in a couple of years, but before that, he was consistently a 28, 29, 30% strikeout per inning guy, much like Lodolo is. And he doesn't have that park to worry about.
I just don't see a 37-year-old turning 38 with bone spurs and elbow inflammation from last year getting shut down doing that this year.
I just don't like seeing that they didn't even have arthroscopic surgery, it looks like.
Yeah.
He didn't have any joint surgery whatsoever.
Yeah, that's weird.
I just don't understand that. If you have bone spurs, it's like bone spurs, they don't leave. It's not like they just kind of like work themselves out like a fleck of dirt in your eye. I mean, they're there. I don't know.
Right. So that begs the question, did they not want to take them out for some other reason? Is there, you know, a complication there? I just don't know. And unless I see something that really convinces me, I feel like he's a big risk at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that he didn't have them removed is a real red flag.
Yeah. And there's no way I'm taking him even at 220. I think he's a closer to like, yeah, I think he's a flyer at this point. I think he's more
I'm glad we had this conversation because I earlier in the offseason, I feel like you were very much in on Darvish, and now you've...
I haven't even had
Yeah,
a
because
drink
we had
yet.
conversations early, and you were... I think this is before you did your digging in on players, though, because you were saying
Well, yeah, it had to have been.
yeah, you love the fact that Darvish was going so late, and he's a guy that could really pay off, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If I said
And
that, then I mean,
if he were healthy, he could be.
yeah. If he were coming in healthy, then, you know, he's kind of like some of these hitters that we're going to discuss. You know, if you are injury prone, but you're coming into the season healthy, I will take a shot on you if you're going at a good enough price. But if you're coming into the season with question marks around your health, I'm out.
That's fair. All right, let's turn our focus to some hitters.
Yeah.
First guy is a guy that I did not expect to draft at all this year, and then I got a $26 share of him in my first online
I was gonna
auction
say,
championship,
technically,
I
you
think.
didn't draft him.
No, I didn't. I purchased him. I mean, I won him. What
You can't say that.
what's the appropriate
Jake's gonna be canceled for saying that. You can't purchase a human being, Jake.
I paid him. Did I pay him? Yeah, sure. I paid him $26 to pitch for my imaginary team. Gunnar Henderson. He is shortstop and third base eligible, so that's a nice little bonus.
Yeah.
And going at an ADP of 35 in January DCs. Like I said, I didn't expect to have him just because I don't even know why. It's just a guy that I hadn't really centered on, despite the fact that he was so good after his early struggles last year. It was just a, well, I'm going to take J-Ram if I'm going to take a third baseman. Well, I'm gonna, take one of these other elite shortstops that have been around for a while, like a Lindor or somebody like that. It's just, I can't even explain it. It's not a guy that just kind of I kept gravitating towards. And then when I saw him up for auction, I'm like, man, I don't
Like
have
the
any Gunner.
slaves,
I don't
that
have
kind of
any
an
Gunner yet.
auction.
What? No, sorry. Like a salary cap draft.
Ah,
Sorry,
okay.
salary cap draft.
That kind of auction, okay.
Yes. Someone nominated the idea of him playing for my imaginary team. And then I said, you know what? Why not? And now the more that I look into him, I'm getting more and more interested in having more. That positional flexibility is a pretty key thing, and getting it out of a guy that I'm never going to take out of my lineup anyway is pretty nice.
I'm
But
continually shocked by what you do in auctions. Like, I feel like I go in thinking you're gonna be like this conservative Jake, and then you just pull shit out of your ass, and I'm like, where did that come from? So
yeah, I consistently do that every time.
I've given yeah, like every time. You know, Marcus said the same thing. He was like, man, Jake just sometimes just goes off the rails on certain players, and then he later is just like, what was that? I gave up with you with auctions. I don't know what your process is anymore.
It's an adventure. I mean, if it's not going to be fun, I don't want to be methodical about everything. It's supposed to be fun, right?
I with most things, I feel like you're not methodical, but I don't know. Like, I feel like you change your mind in the within the draft itself
Yeah.
or the auction itself, like.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
It's that power of suggestion, those guys being out there with the possibility of being on my imaginary team. And I just in the heat of that moment, sometimes I make a hasty decision.
Okay. Yeah, so Gunnar Henderson is interesting. He's a guy who, like you said, struggled really early.
Massively
Yeah,
struggled.
massively struggled. By the way, I did have a share of Gunnar Henderson. Do you want to guess which team he was on of mine?
Oh, I would imagine. Wait, which team you? Oh, that was probably Glarf, of course.
No.
No?
It was a Fantrax league. It
Oh.
was my auto draft
Oh,
Fantrax league.
the auto
So,
draft.
for those of you who don't know this yet, I'm pretty sure I talked about how big of a dumbass I am, but I scheduled a draft on St. Patrick's Day. I go out for St. Patrick's Day and drink heavily every year. And I knew that I was going to do that, but I told myself I can get home by, I think the draft is at 10 or 11. I can't remember which, because we start early. You know, we start in the morning, you know, 8, 9 a.m., something like that. And so I'm like, you know, by I'm sure by 10, I'll be good. So I will say this. I got home in time for the draft. But then as I was waiting the half hour for the draft to start, I passed out. And did not wake up until like the last couple rounds, or was it the entire draft? I don't remember, but I missed most of that draft and ended up with Gunnar Henderson on my team. And I was like, son of a bitch. Now, granted, Gunnar Henderson was not nearly the worst part about that auto draft. The complete lack of closers was one, bad part of it. In addition to so many other things that were just horrific about that draft. But I was like, yeah, let's see if I can pull out a cash out of this.
Was that a $500 league?
It was, yes.
Nice.
Yeah. I think I got like fifth. Like I came back pretty well. I finished higher than I thought I would, but I was hoping I'd be able to pull out like a third place or something like that, but no. So I did have one share of Gunnar Henderson. So I was very acutely aware of his early season struggles, but he hit 170 with three homers, 92 WRC plus, which honestly was much higher than I thought it was. Cause
yeah, right.
I thought he struggled much more than that, honestly. But then from May 13th on, he had a 131 WRC plus with 25 home runs, and it came with a much more aggressive plate approach. And, you know, it was one of those things where, again, you're looking for, is this legitimate? Is this sticky? Is this something he's going to carry forward? And there's an interview with him where he acknowledged this and that he made a conscious effort to be more aggressive. And he was talking about how the coaches told him, just go up there and swing more and all that stuff. So I feel much more confident that that trend will continue into 2024 because he knew that he needed to be more aggressive. And then the success came as a result of that aggression. So
yeah,
my only concern with him is that he's always struggled to hit lefties. And I thought it was kind of comparable to Corbin Carroll, who's another very talented top prospect lefty, like Gunnar Henderson is. Gunnar struggled more versus lefties in the minors than Corbin Carroll did, though. But, you know, Carroll wasn't good versus lefties last year in the majors either. So, you know, I do have some reservations that I hope that the Orioles don't platoon him. I just can't see it happening, though. Like, I know that they do with Cedric Mullins, but I feel like with a guy like Gunnar Henderson, who's their, you know, young top prospects, prodigy playing for that. Like, it's hard for me to see them unless it's like, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 months into the season and he's still struggling, but he's their, you know, he's their starting third baseman. Like it's tough for me to see them benching him versus lefties. Even I think it would take him struggling for a while. I expect him to make some gains versus lefties, but if he doesn't, it's possible. It's possible that they could platoon him some.
Well, they're already platooning Ryan O'Hearn. He's a franchise cornerstone kind of player. I mean, it's hard to sell that to a fan base that you're going to take essentially your, you know, one of your top two players and not play him 25% of the season. That just doesn't seem to make sense. And he started to run a lot more too. You know, granted, 10 steals isn't a ton, but
he has a lot of speed.
He stole 9 of those bases after that May 12th, May 13th point that you mentioned. So hopefully that continues. You know, it'd be real nice to get a 30-15 season out of him. And I certainly think that's possible. The OBP was still pretty good. You know, he gets on base plenty, and it's very likely that he's going to continue to hit first or second in that lineup. So there should be plenty of opportunities for him to run.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at, like, who their projected benches, and, you know, Ramon Urias does play some third base, but he's horrendous versus lefties as well. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, he is a righty, but he sucks versus lefties. And then they also have Jorge Mateo, who hasn't played third base since 2021 and only played 9 games. So I don't know. I just don't know, you know, who would they necessarily put at third base? Maybe Jordan Westberg, or
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, you got Kobe Mayo too, but if you bring up another prospect to
play
platoon
part-time
with your prospect, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No,
either.
I mean, I think Westberg, they can move Westberg to third base. You know, that might make some sense. And he is a righty who hit lefties well. So I think that's really the only way that Henderson ends up sitting is if they, you know, move Westberg to third base versus lefties, and then play, you know, Mateo at second, or, you know, whoever else.
I
so,
still think that's a pretty long shot. I wouldn't worry about it. This is only you know, if it gets to June and he's hitting like 140 against lefties, then maybe they start talking about it.
I like that Henderson's not a second round pick. Like, I think he's a tough second round pick, but I think in the third round, I think he's a solid pick.
Yeah. Like $26 price in that auction was perfectly fine. And that's the kind of guy that I like to take. I like to take a lot of those, like 24 to $33 guys on offense. It's the way I like to build my team. So he was a perfect guy for that kind of build. Oh boy. I see the name that's coming next. We had a lot of discussion about Giancarlo Stanton in our consortium chat, and I did one of those kind of 180s. Originally, I thought that Giancarlo Stanton was not somebody I would entertain being on one of my teams, just because he's always hurt and I don't like to draft hurt guys. But the more I thought about it, when you are going at ADP of 334 in January DCs, and he's outfield eligible, which originally I thought he was only UT only, but he played 30 plus games in the outfield last year. It's hard to argue with that shot. The power is still massive. Like, he hits the ball harder than anybody still. Granted, he's getting old and he's coming off a really, really bad year, but he's still got the 40 homer upside inside of him as long as he's on the field for 120 games.
I was so mad when I heard you drafted him, because I'm like, okay, here's going to be one where we can actually have an argument, you know, because, like, I feel like people think we agree on too many things. And if you were in our text thread, you would understand that Jake and I fight quite a bit when it comes to fantasy baseball. We certainly differ on a lot, although I don't think it comes on this podcast.
It does not come out all the time on here.
So I thought this was going to be a point of contention for us, which I thought would be a good thing. And then you fucking drafted him between the last podcast and today. And I was like, you son of a bitch.
I had a team where I needed to really bolster my outfield that I had let languish in my latest DC. And there he was.
Because Tony, Marcus, and I were all on Stanton at this price. We're all like, yeah. Because the thing is, guys, you should be excited when a player with a good profile, even if they're injury prone, when you're talking about this late, when they have a bad year, that's like them being on sale. Cause that's like, you know, they're at a low point. They're coming off of a low point where, you know what their midpoint is. It's above that. That's what you can expect. And you can also hope for that upside. So, you know, I'm looking for those guys who are coming off of bad years. And you're looking for outliers. You're looking for things that you don't think are going to happen again. You know, he's in a similar boat to Buxton this year. Buxton's going late too. You know, you may or may not have heard me spouting off about how much I never like to draft Buxton and how much
I always
hate
draft it. Byron Buxton. Yeah.
Tony wants to draft Buxton every goddamn year, but Buxton's going at 288, you know, and, you know, he's going after,
but he is UT only, unlike Stanton.
True.
But wait, oh, I'm sorry. He's the starting center fielder for the Twins.
Obviously, we don't think that that's going to hold. I don't think he's going to be able to play 20 games, stay healthy in the outfield if they are stupid enough to even try that. But when you're talking about a guy going after Sal Frelick and Mackenzie Gore, I mean, yeah, I'm in on Buxton. So no question at that price. But back to Stanton, you know, he like you said, he's coming off of a putrid, not just bad, putrid season. He's now 34 years old, but the main driver of Stanton being bad was his average, because the power is still there.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at his line drive rate, it just plummeted last year. And that just doesn't seem like something that's sustainable. I, you know, when you have a line drive rate of, you know, 12 and a half. Is that what it was?
12 and a half, yeah.
12 and a half, yeah, 12.5%. Now, granted, he has regressed four straight years. 26.5% was in 2020. Obviously, it's a short season. So we'll look at 2021, where he had 35 homers and hit 273. He had an 18.5 line drive percentage, and then a 14.8% in 2022, and then 12.5% last year. But 12.5% was by far the lowest of his career. Even if he gets that back up to like 15, 16, 17, 18%, he can still be very useful. So I just don't see any reason not to take a shot at him at this point. So, yeah, at that point, when you're talking about after 300, and I do think he's going to go up, you know, I think someone, I can't remember if it was on in our group chat or on Twitter in general, but someone was like, I think maybe it was Zach. He's like, you know, the first time they're going to show shirtless pics of Giancarlo Stanton in spring training, his ADP is going to shoot up. And that's absolutely true. I expect Stanton and Buxton to both be way higher, you know, in March than they are now. There could be a point where they get too high where I'm not willing to take them, but right now I'm all over them. You know, they were easy fades when they were in the top, you know, 100 to 150 players. I'm not going there. But when you're talking about these guys with the talent that they have going, you know, 250, 300, 330, yeah, I will take them then. You know, he had a hamstring injury last year, but that was his only injury.
That's his perennial injury, but
exactly. Yeah. And Brian Cashman's been raving about his diet and conditioning. We would like to see these back on yoga again, because, that seemed like it worked in the past, but, you know, obviously you hear a lot of the best shape of his life stuff this time of the year, but it's not a bad thing to hear that he's, you know, trying to condition and diet more, because that tells me that he probably wasn't doing that the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Look, there are a number of his skills that were pretty much right in line with everything else that he's done, as you mentioned already. All the contact rates were the same. The strikeout rate didn't change.
Yep.
Swinging strike rate was fine. You know, it was on par with his career norms. Hold the ball the same amount. You know, everything looks like it may have just been a little bit of bad luck. And
yeah,
even if he's hitting 220, and as long as he's on the field, he's going to hit you 30 plus homers. And yeah, going past round 20, and he's outfield eligible. And we know what especially in DCs, we know what a battle of attrition it is with outfield and starting pitching. So he's definitely.
Yeah, and look what Ozuna did last year. You know, people were including certain people on this podcast were leaving him for dead. You know, he was coming off of a.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, it was me. Sure. You know, Ozuna had a injury wrecked 2021, and then he came back in 2022 and only hit 226 with 23 homers. And then what did he do last year, Jake?
Well, he stopped fighting with his wife and had a really good season.
Now, if only you could do that.
Yeah. We don't slap each other.
That's true. At least I hope it's true. Mm-hmm. Ozuna had 40 homers and a 274 average. And, you know, like looking at it in hindsight, everybody should have seen, like, he was the perfect buy low last year. I mean, everything said, he's still pretty much the same guy. He just, you know, bad luck, down year, what have you. These guys who have shown it to you in the past, you know, he's 32, you know, Stanton 35. You're not 39, 40, you know, this is not a point where you're too old. Sorry, Stanton 34, not 35. You know, these guys are the ones that you should be looking to target, because that's where you find your profit. You know, you find your profit in those guys who went from horrific years to coming out of nowhere to big years.
Speaking of which, you know, let's go through some list of those guys that they had some draft costs last year, but the year did not go as everybody thought, and you're buying them back.
And we talked about a couple
at a much
of them
cheaper
the last
price. Spot. Yeah, a few of them, but guys like Rowdy Tellez, Hayden Wesneski, Clark Schmidt, Taylor Ward. I mean, Lars Nootbaar wasn't technically a bust, I would say, but he definitely didn't pay off where
well,
people were
this
drafting
this
him.
section isn't called busts. It's the big buzz guys last
Yeah,
year.
the
These
buzz
were the
guys
guys
last
who.
year.
So Nupar was a big buzz guy last year, along with Rowdy, Wisniewski, Clark Schmidt, Taylor Ward, Miguel Vargas, Jeffrey Springs, Jordan Walker. Like, those were the guys who were shooting up the draft board in March.
Yeah, they were shooting up. Nupar, not so much. I think Nupar was pretty much in line. No, he got a lot of buzz, but he stayed pretty low. But the other guys, yeah. Schmidt, Vargas,
he stayed
Springs.
Pretty low.
He
Nupar
did.
definitely shot up. He shot up several rounds.
Not in the drafts that I did. All right.
His ADP
Whatever.
did.
Okay. Well, I don't remember that. But
okay.
All those guys didn't end up paying off their draft costs, yes. But some of these guys do make for some good buys this year. And I've drafted all Rowdy, Taylor Ward, Jordan Walker. I have shares of all three of those guys. And I think I do have a share of Nootbar as well. I like all those guys to give me much more than where they're going right now. Rowdy's going super late. Ward is going later than he was going last year. And really all that happened was he got hit in the face. I mean, the dude was really hitting well when he got injured. And Jordan Walker has a cemented spot in the Cardinals lineup, and he hit really well in the second half of the season and showed that he could hit for average, and even the power started to grow a little bit, and he's going way cheaper than he was going last year.
I mean, Taylor Ward definitely struggled a lot more than I expected him to. You know, he
in
went
the beginning,
14 homers in 400 plate appearances. You know, he's coming off of 23 homers in 564. Hit 281. You know, granted, we didn't think that the 281 was going to stick. He's probably more of like a, you know, 260 hitter, something like that, maybe 255. But, you know, he's a guy I still like to take another step forward. I think that he has that in him.
And he started to show it before he got smacked in the face.
Okay, fair enough. Jordan Walker's a guy who he was 21 years old last year. And between the majors and the minors, he hit 20 homers.
And playing
homers.
A new position in the field as well.
True. 20 homers, 11 steals, and, you know, he hit 276 in the majors. Guys who have success to that level at age 21, it's a very, very good list to be on. So, you know, Jordan Walker is a guy who could take a huge leap this year, and it wouldn't shock me. And I'm hoping people have that, you know, fatigue from last year. Because, guys, the worst thing you can do is write off guys who failed you last year, because often those are the guys that you want to buy the next year. Like, if you bought them last year and they failed you, they probably didn't have a good season, right? Those are exactly the kind of targets you want to pick. You know, the post-hype sleepers, those are the guys who are often the biggest profit centers.
Yeah. There was a reason that you were in on those guys, and as long as they still showed you those skills, maybe the results weren't there, and their situation hasn't decreased. I mean, Jordan Walker, for example, is he made his hay at the end of the year, and he is now a fixture in that lineup. When before he was hitting eighth, you know, they sent him down, and there's no reason to be off of him if you thought that he was going to amount to something last year, because the situation's better for him now.
Granted, I just looked at his ADP and it's like 127.
It's 127.
He's not someone who's falling. So I thought maybe he might be.
When it was hype time last year, though, I mean, I think you and Glarf, didn't you take him in the seventh or eighth round in Glarf last year?
Yes. I don't remember if it was seventh or eighth, but yes.
And that was in February, or was it early March?
Seventh is like, you know, it was probably in the 105 range, so slightly higher than where he's going now. Yeah. But yeah, just don't write off the guys who let you down last year. You know, don't have biases. Those are often the guys that you should be buying back again. You know, some of those guys who are big buzz guys. You know, Wisniewski, Schmidt. With Wisniewski, I don't think he's going to get a rotation spot. Maybe at some point in the future, but he's not a guy I'm looking to draft again. Clark Schmidt. I did love what I saw out of Schmidt. I think he's a guy who's usable. I don't think he's a guy I'm really targeting this year. Jeffrey Springs obviously got hurt, but he was really good before he got hurt. I think Rowdy Tellez is a great buy low. Miguel Vargas, it's just he doesn't have
a spot. I'm just waiting for him to get traded to the White Sox.
Yeah, if Miguel Vargas gets traded into an opportunity, he's a guy who I would definitely want to
he's going round 30 right now. So
yeah, I mean, well, right now he's a bench player, so I wouldn't bother drafting him in non-DCs. But in DCs, I think he'd be a smart purchase at that price.
Now, on the other side of the coin, you talked about not being off of guys just because they let you down. What about a guy that performed a little bit over his skis last year, like Nico Hoerner? The underlying metrics for Nico's average were okay in terms of just average, but you weren't going to see him probably hit more than the 9 homers last year that he did, because despite his 33% Statcast hard hit rate, he only had 9 barrels on the whole season, which is a 1.7 barrel percentage for the year. So a lot of his hard hit balls are likely on the ground. Are you taking him at his 62 ADP this year when there are a number of guys going after him that might perform a little bit worse, but might not be that much worse?
Or could even be better. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Nico Hoerner doesn't have that elite skill set, like where he's a guy where, you know, if you're going to be taking someone around pick 62, you know, you want him to be significantly better than the other guys going around him. I mean, like, I just don't think he's that kind of player. Like, I think he's, I mean, the 43 steals is great. Can you bank on that? Can you bank on his health sticking? You know, like 33% Statcast hard hit rate, like you said, 1.7% barrel rate. This is not a guy who is going to come out of the woodworks with more power. I think, you know, 10 home runs is about it. And, you know, you're again, when you're taking a guy coming off of a career year like that, or whatever you want to call it, you're taking him at his high watermark. You're taking him saying, okay, this is probably the best what we're going to see out of Nico Hoerner, or about the best that we're going to see out of him. And I'm expecting that again. That's what you're saying when you draft him at that pick. And, you know, I saw a tweet from a friend of the podcast Guilds saying that as much, that, you know, he's never going to take Nico Hoerner. There's guys going after him who could easily outperform him, if not, you know, just do as well as him. Guys like Andrés Giménez, your boy Tyro Estrada, Ketel Marte, Geloff, Volpe, you know, all going significantly later, like 4 rounds later or more for some of them. So anytime you have a point where they're basically guys in the same tier and there's like a 4-round difference between them, you want to take the guys in the later, you know, going 4 rounds later. You don't want to take the guy at the front of the tier. So while Hoerner, you know, maybe a better mix of steals and average, you know, Ketel a little bit different of a skill set. Ketel's more of a power guy. They're both good average. You know, Volpe won't give you the average of Hoerner, but can steal as much and probably homer more than Hoerner.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, Geloff kind of well-rounded, but won't give you that average that Hoerner gives you. Tyro might be able to beat him though, straight up. Like, Tyro has more power than Hoerner. Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to steal 40, but
yeah, he's probably not going to steal as much, but you know, everything else is pretty comparable. You just don't want to be taking guys, you know, 4 plus rounds apart from each other who basically have the same skill set or relatively, you know, the same. Like, it just it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, relatively, you know, Nico's got more speed than all those guys, but all those guys are going to hit more homers than him easily. And yeah,
you're also dependent on Nico staying healthy though.
Right. And he does tend to have hamstring injuries, but yeah, when you're paying a 4-round difference in price for it is basically because of last season, because, you know, last draft season, he was going where those guys are going now. He was an 11th round pick. He was a 10th round pick.
And do you think that Nico steals 40 plus again? I mean, he stole 20 in 2022. And granted,
if I had to bet one way or the other, if he's healthy, I mean, if he's healthy, yeah, I expect him to steal 40. But
I would take the under on that. I would say he steals in the 30s, maybe even low 30s.
Okay. Well, I tend to disagree. I think he's going to keep running, but he just has to stay on the field, and that's been his issue in years prior to last. One guy that did kind of pop for me, and we're going way down the list now, a guy that I had not heard of at all until Roster Resource put him in the starting lineup for the Oakland A's, Darryl Hernaez, who is going around ADP 550.
Is
in
it
the
Darryl
January
or Darrell? Because there's only
Darrell.
One.
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, he is.
And I only ask
I forget
because
where
there's
he
an
was.
African American on a show called The
No,
Challenge that I watch, who's
no,
Darrell.
I think he's from Puerto Rico. He was signed by the Orioles overseas, so I'm assuming he's of Hispanic descent. But I'll look.
It doesn't matter. Continue.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, he was drafted as a 17-year-old. But he's currently, it currently looks like he's the favorite to start for the A's. Their other options are really bad. You know, they have like Nick Allen floating around. Aledmys Diaz is still on the team. Max Muncy, the other Max Muncy, is not quite ready for the majors yet. And Jordan Diaz doesn't play short. So it really does make sense that they would give this kid a shot. They acquired him for Cole Irvin before the 2023 season. And he doesn't turn 23 until the end of this campaign coming up. He's always been young in the minors. Every level that he's been in since COVID, he's been one of the youngest guys in the league. He played in low A, high A, and double A in 2022, and then got traded, as I said. His double A time with the Orioles affiliate was pretty bad, but then with the A's affiliate in the Texas League, he had a really solid double A half season, and they moved him up to triple A last year. This kid looks pretty solid. Granted, it's the Oakland A's. It's not a good offense. It's not a good park, but it looks like the opportunity's there for him. And middle infield dries up in the late rounds of DCs. So he's a guy that I've taken a couple times already just because of the fact that it looks like he's going to play, and it looks like he's going to be better than, you know, a bench bat kind of guy. He looks like he's going to be average, maybe even a little bit better average MLB hitter early on. He's got some pop. He had some decent hard hit rate numbers in AAA last year. He had a max EV of 112, which is pretty solid. Did hit a lot of grounders, though. That's kind of the one thing that needs to change. That park, you can't expect him to hit a lot of homers, but he could be a solid 10-15 guy because he's got a decent amount of speed as well. He stole 13 bags in the minors last year. I don't know. It's a guy that I've kind of like to take a shot on because, like I said, that part of the draft, middle infield, really, really dry. There's pretty much nothing there that I want to put on my teams. I drafted a lot of middle infielders earlier in my DC so that I didn't have to take middle infielders late, because it's pretty much guys like Kike Hernandez and Paul DeJong and our favorite guy, Adalberto Mondesi, down there. There's not a whole lot going on.
Yeah, it definitely seems like an early second base, especially. It seems like it's draft early kind of year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, DCs, you got to have depth, and
yeah,
I don't want
true.
my depth to be trash.
Mm-hmm.
I would like my depth to play. So,
yeah.
And play, you know, not like, I don't know, Nick Ahmed play, maybe. Actually give me something that I could possibly use. So this looks like a good guy to take a chance on so far.
Yeah, I honestly, until you had brought him up, I mean, you know, I'm not where you are in terms of breadth of studying so far. So you're, you know, doing drafts already, so you are more from, although you didn't know anything about the Rockies depth chart last week.
The
So
Rockies depth chart,
you seem to pick and choose what you, which teams or which players you know about.
Yes,
So
when I pick shitty teams, I prefer the A's to the Rockies.
Apparently, which, you
Yeah.
know, obviously, because, you know, the A's playing in Oakland Stadium much better
Right.
than Coors. Yeah.
Right.
But anyways, so I didn't know anything about this guy until I looked into him. But yeah, the play approach is very good. I will say, I looked on Twitter to see if there's any discussion about him. and it's like nothing. I mean, there's some prospect guys talking about how he's like a, you know, top 10 prospect, but like, you know, top, you know, maybe like 6, 7, 8, kind of in that range for the A's. I see nothing on the A's talking about him starting. So it feels like they just haven't signed their starter yet, and he's probably like a depth player, but at least to start the year.
Ahmed Rosario.
What?
Ahmed Rosario.
What about him?
I don't know. You said they hadn't signed their starter yet. You think they're going
to get the guy? Well, I don't know. I thought you were wish casting Ahmed Rosario to the White Sox.
No. No. Oh, that was Miguel Vargas.
No.
That was a different conversation. Yes, you're right. Yes.
Okay, but you said Ahmed Rosario would be a great fit for them because they don't give a shit about defense and all that.
That's not wish casting. That's making a joke.
Oh, okay. I've seen the doctor, Mike Carter, talking about the same. Shout out, Mike Carter.
Oh, I'm sure he's very excited for that.
Yeah. Yeah, but he, you know, he's said that's exactly the kind of player I can see the White Sox signing and putting into their lineup with Rosario. But yeah, so for me, I feel like Hernandez will not be the starter come the season, but I think he's a fine DC play because I think he could easily come up at some point like Geloff did last year. And the guys who don't struggle with their strikeout rate usually have a much easier adjustment in the majors when they do come up.
Yeah, and that looks really good for him. He walks at a decent clip. The Fangraphs scouting report from last June, so mid-season last year, said he has an obvious knack for barreling up the ball with his extra base hit scattered to all fields and his home runs tending to clear the fence by a good distance. I mean, that gets me excited because that's an objective person, you know, putting their stamp on it.
Oakland's not ideal for hitting home runs.
No.
But
I just, the opportunity's there. And the A's have signed some retreads over the last couple years.
I fully expect them. I don't think he's going to start the year for them. That would shock me. I think they're definitely going to sign a retread of some sort.
Well, he played half a year in AAA last year, so it's not like they'd be rushing.
That's fair. I think he's a great pick in DC's where he's going, you know, 555. I would never argue with anything even close to that. You know, I think you could jump him 100 picks from there. He's probably still fine.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
But... All right. Well, I don't know. I haven't done a draft, so I don't. But, you know, when pick 500 rolls around, he's a guy you should probably be thinking about.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think I'll probably I don't know if I'm going to do another DC, but if I did, I probably would be targeting him again. Just because I think there's a pretty solid chance of him contributing. Would you like to learn some etymology, Dave?
Do I have a choice?
I mean, you can leave.
That's true. I won't leave.
Okay, give it another shot. We're just going to do one. We're going to do one every show.
Okay.
Etymology is, of course, the study of the origin of words.
Of course.
Yes. And we're going to talk about baseball terminology. We're going to talk about the diamond, where the action happens, Dave. The four white lines with the pitcher in the middle.
I'm familiar. Now,
you've seen the shape before.
Yes.
I'll tell you right now, the word diamond, it does not have to do originally with the shape in any way, shape, or form. No pun intended. So, if you had to guess what the actual literal meaning of the Latin word adiamantem is, which is where the word diamond came from. So it came from Old French diamant, which came from the Latin adiamantem. Now, I'm not talking adamantium. Like
I was going to say, God damn it. Why did you have to take my response? I was going to say, is this not the stuff that Wolverine has inside
of
him?
That's a bit of a clue for you. That's a bit of a clue for you. So
it is?
What do you It is a bit of a clue for you.
Adamantium,
what do you think,
is a clue?
What do you think adiamantem means
adamantium
in English? It's a what is that Latin term?
Does it have to do with recovery?
No.
Does it have to do with claws?
No.
Does it have to do with Santa Claus?
What? The fuck?
Different type of claws.
Yeah, that would be German.
All right, you said it was a clue, so it doesn't have to do with claws or regeneration. So what am I?
Wolverine.
Wolves?
Wolverine is regenerative, but what about his adamantium claws?
Oh, is yeah.
They
so those are
are.
both. They're retractable.
No, good try. Well, think about diamonds in real life too. What's a quality that diamonds have?
Clarity, cut, color. What's a quality? They're
hardness.
They're strong.
Hardness.
They're hard.
Yes. Unbreakability. So adiamantium, which is influenced by previous Greek words, but it basically means.
So adamantium did come from this.
Yes,
then.
It is. It is based on the term. Yes, it's
okay.
a made up. It's a made up element, but it's based on the term,
right.
The Latin term. Yes. So adiamantium is basically the hardest metal. It means metal of extreme hardness or something that's really hard. And then in the 15th century, it basically became a term that was used to describe the actual diamond itself.
Well, yeah, I feel like we're talking about two different kinds of diamonds here. You're talking about
right.
the diamond that
but the
you
origin
wear.
of the term,
Right.
the origin
Yeah.
of the term diamond comes from the fact that diamonds are extremely hard. And then the shape term was a geometric figure, diamond. That name actually didn't get attached to the shape until the 15th century.
So
Oddly enough.
Why is it called the diamond then? The baseball diamond.
The shape got that term later on. So in the 15th century, that word diamond came to be used for a geometrical figure that has four equal straight lines forming two acute and two obtuse angles. So basically
okay.
two parallel sets of lines
But
that form
why?
two acute. Why that is? That's a good question. I don't have that information.
Okay. Because we were talking about a hard metal.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a hard metal have anything to do with, you know, the four points with the two acute and two obtuse angles?
Well, it has to do with the progression that these words tend to take on throughout their lives. So you'll find with a lot of words that their meanings tend to change as cultures change, and then they have new applicable or new applied meanings that grow out of just basically how things shift. So the Latin word, it originally meant something really hard, and then it came to be used to describe the actual diamond itself, like the gem. And then the word diamond came to be used for the shape that we know it as today. So it's kind of a couple steps as these words progress through history.
Okay.
It is interesting how languages grow and change. And English is a living language. Latin is technically not a living language anymore, but the way that the words that are applied in Latin still do change, because there are a lot of Latin words that mean something very different from the way that we use them in English. But the root there is the hardness of the actual diamond itself, which is kind of cool. So the shape has nothing to do with where the actual word diamond came from.
Okay.
Which
When
is
we
kind
go
of weird.
To Arupe in 3 weeks, you should tell them that you're going to give them a lesson before you give them the
mm-hmm.
check for the donation.
Yep. They have to listen to me talk about words for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I used to work there, I didn't teach them about words. When I worked at the summer camp, I taught them about healthy habits. That was my class that I taught
wait,
in the
wait,
summer
wait, wait,
camp.
wait. You talked about healthy habits?
Yeah. Yeah.
What
We
healthy
learned about
habits do you have?
Eating right, of course, and exercising and taking care of my body.
What exercise do you do?
How dare you? I'm a paragon of fitness.
My
Or
cousin has
paradigm.
a gym called Paragon, but I don't. You're not a Paragon. What are we talking about?
I taught
I mean,
healthy
other
habits
than
in
softball,
woodshop. I did
other than
woodshop too.
softball, what?
I did woodshop too.
Okay, I mean,
that one tracks.
You have a lot of you have a lot of skills, but in terms of healthy habits, I don't know, man.
Staying up till 1:40 in the morning doing podcasts.
Yeah, like that. You are the biggest. Okay, I don't know between you and Mike, my college roommate. I don't know which one of you is the worst procrastinator I've ever met, but it's the two of you by yourselves by a landslide over anybody else I've ever met. So
that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know that that is the thing I would.
Well,
that's the
there's
topic.
There's a reason I don't teach the class anymore then, I guess.
I mean, I guess those who can't teach, they say. So I guess if you can't have healthy habits, you can teach healthy habits. Maybe.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
That is why teaching is my profession.
I just want to see you.
There are a lot of things that I can't.
I just want to see you bore some children, though, before we give them a check for money that they're not actually getting. But
they're not getting in their pocket at all. All right, let's end the show there with disappointing
children. All right,
children.
Let's end the show there.
Disappointing children. Thank you all for supporting us and listening to episode 2 of The Reboot. Please subscribe, tell your friends, share us on Twitter, and review if you feel so inclined. Dave, I don't think we mentioned this before, but where can we find you on Elon Musk's side project?
That would be at RunDMCD. Add that D.
Add the D. You can find me at the Dust Mite. Thanks, guys. This has been Rotosaurus High Stakes Heat, and we'll talk to you next time.